Okay, before we start, I just want to take an opportunity to publicly thank Rabbi Rosner for all of the Torah that he's shared with us, you know, with all of the speakers that come in and come through, and really outstanding speakers, as, you know, we've seen each and every one of them. We all recognize that the most exciting night of the week is the night that Rabbi Rosner gives shiur, because he's Rabbi Rosner, and those shiurim are always just a tremendous treat for us, and he's a busy person in camp and year round, and the fact that he takes time to teach Torah to the Masmidim, even if just gracing the Beis Medrash with his presence, would be more than enough in terms of providing inspiration. But the Torah that he shares with us is greatly, greatly appreciated. I just want to say thank you in case I forget later on in the summer. Okay, Efrain, take it away.
Okay. Thank you to Rabbi Leibowitz and Rabbi Rosner for giving me time. Let's get started. If Rebbe was given the option when he got married to learn in Kolo for the rest of his life and be supported comfortably to live in the location of his choice, would he have taken the option? If someone gave Rebbe that option today, would his answer be different?
I usually say I start, but...
Yeah, age before beauty. Okay.
The only thing that I have over Rabbi Leibowitz is age. So I can't argue with something as objective as that. But again, also just to thank Rabbi Leibowitz also for the opportunity to share Torah, and I don't really understand how he takes care of everything that he's involved in and all the responsibilities that he has with all the organizations and personally, but chazak ve'ematz, and keep up the amazing, amazing work for Klal Yisrael. I think this is an amazing question. I really liked it. You know, sometimes the questions are pretty similar over the years, but I think this was a fascinating question just to reflect and to think about. You know, if somebody, when you got married, say, I'm going to give you enough money, you could sit and learn for the rest of your life. No responsibilities. So let me say it this way. Let's start with the second question first. What would be your answer today? So that is much clearer and easier to understand. I always tell my kids, I thank Hashem every single day. Every single day, mamish, to be able to be involved in what I try to be involved in. And I daven, part of my davening, every Shmona Esrei, is that I should be able to fulfill the potential, any potential. We have no idea what our potentials are. And to daven that, whatever potential each of us have that we could fulfill. But I tell my kids, if I won the lottery today and I won billions and billions of dollars, I might get another car, I might get this and that, but I generally wouldn't change much. It's a tremendous chus, and there's nothing as gratifying and there's nothing as rewarding as teaching Torah. Now, Kodesh Baruch Hu is called Hamalami Torah Lamo Yisrael, and we have a mitzvah to mirror HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? They say famously the Rav, out of all the Rav's titles, he says, I'm just a Malamid, you know, just. He is a Malamid. There's no greater activity to be involved in. There's an unbelievable, unbelievable Chasam Sofer. If you want to look it up, it's in the introduction to Yaradeya. He has two pages in the introduction. It's not printed in all of them, but if you find it, it's called Pituche Chosam. And if you look there, he talks about Avram Avinu, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu loved Avram Avinu so much. And only Chassam Sofer can say such a thing. He says, you think Avram Avinu couldn't reach the levels of Chanoch? Chanoch, who is number 7 person in the world, and the Torah tells us, Ki lakacho to Elokim, he never died because he just became so spiritually connected and spiritual, and the world wasn't roy for him, and he got taken up. And what about Avram Avinu? Avram Avinu couldn't have done that? Says Chassam Sofer, he could have done that. He could have done that. He could have meditated and been by himself and stayed in the forest and connected. But Avram Avinu knew that wasn't his tachlis. And that's not the tachlis of a Jew. The tachlis of a Jew is to create oneself, up, grow, and then to raise others up. He knew that's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted from him. And he sacrificed, says the Chassam Sofer. He didn't reach the levels of Chanoch. Because he knew this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from him. He wants to be Mashpia, and this is the goal of what his life was about. And that's about Avram Avinu. So when we think about learning, obviously you have to learn a lot in order to be able to teach and to be able to share, and you have to have the intake in order to give the outtake. But a couple of weeks ago when we had the Gedolim Day here. So there was a lot of talk about, you know, the Rav that spoke here, and it's an amazing program about Shas Yidden. And it's wonderful. I'm not going to say, no, it's wonderful and amazing that there are, and it's unbelievable that people know Shas by heart. So I was talking to one of the other Rabbanim in this camp about it. And I was a little bit of like, you know, I'm not going to know Shas by heart. And he says, but what does Hashem want from you? And what does Hashem want from almost everybody? And, you know, where does it say that the goal of life is to sit in a room by yourself learning Torah and not influencing anybody else besides yourself? What does it say? That even the Rambam, the famous Rambam, it's famous if you know it, we'll make it famous. The Rambam at the end of Hilchos Shemitah V'Yovel, where the Rambam talks about, and the Shevet Levi, and not only Shevet Levi, even those others you could be besides Shevet Levi. But the Rambam says, to be Shevet Levi, to sit and learn, and Lahoros Derachim Yesharim, and to teach. Shevet Levi wasn't about just sitting and learning. You know, is that Yechide Skula, and think about all of our we'll get back to the first part of the question in a second, but it's going to be shorter. But think about all the great leaders of our history. Okay, there were certain Gedolim that just sat and learned, and they were asked a couple of questions here and there. And they were difficult, and even in our generation, you have a Rav Yashiv and a Rav Shlomo Zalman, and different models. But generally, obviously, there has to be a certain time for learning, but the goal of life is not to be only worried about yourself. So again, if I would be given that opportunity today, no. It's hard to know what I would have thought as a 23-year-old, early, just married guy who's out of yeshiva, out of YU, and, you know, somebody says you can learn, but also don't know what your kochos are at that time. And, you know, it's, but that's, you know, just, it's hard to know the past. Like, I mentioned this question to my wife before. She's like, what? You would have just had to learn? What do you say that? So that's another question about the best advice that you could get. It's like, always listen to your wife. But it's, yeah, one has to realize that's not the goal of life overall. In the short run, yes, there's in terms of dedicating one's life to learning and intake. But the role of a Jewish leader is really to share and to uplift and to you know, have an outside influence.
Okay, you may notice a trend tonight when my answers will be very similar to Rabbi Rosner's, just minus the Torah. It'll just be like the bottom line. I don't have any different Torah to support it. It's just, I don't know, I feel like this. So I would say, looking retrospectively back to when I was that age, without a doubt, I would have taken the money. Without a doubt, of course I would have. I used to buy like lottery tickets and like win for life, you know, $2,000 a week a month for the rest of my life or something. I'll be set, you know. I didn't even know what money meant, but thank God no one offered me that, because first of all, that's not the way to become. There are certain people in every generation that are mesugal to be sitting and learning full time. Like Rav Chaim Kanievsky had his impact on Klal Yisrael, and he never really, I mean, he said he was Shalmi Shir for a short period of time after his father died. I think he tried to be a substitute teacher once, and all the kids left, and he was like, okay, I guess I'll learn. Like, there was he didn't have it in him to teach, and he was mesugal to be sitting and learning every day for his entire life. But one thing that all of those people have in common, there aren't many, but all of those people that have in common, those who really make it by sitting and learning, is that none of them have it easy. If you have it easy, it's almost like a guarantee that you're not going to make it. Meaning there is a concept of pas melech tochel, there is a concept of having a certain sense of mesiras nefesh for Torah, and nothing valuable in life comes easy. So if someone would have offered me, here, I'll give you an easy road and you can just sit and learn for the rest of your life, I for sure would have said yes, and it would have been the worst decision I ever made, because it's very hard to become something when things are that easy. Having said that, I definitely should have learned for longer than I did. I didn't learn for very long at all. You could see the difference between me and Rabbi Rosner. But being supported would not have been good for me, I don't think. You know, Baruch Hashem does support me, you know, even to live in the five towns. But not for learning full time. He wants other things from me along the lines of, I'm pretty sure that he wants other things from me. I don't think I would have made it. I think I would have burnt out like most people do, you know, at some point in my 30s. And then I would have been like, now what? And that would have been very, very difficult. In addition to that, I mentioned earlier this summer that I get to have extra kavanah in one of the brachos of Shemoneh Esrei. Most people can only daven for Torah in Atachon and Lodim Das. I get to daven for Torah in Baruch Aleinu because that's how I make a living. So we have that advantage as well.
Does Rebbe think it's worthwhile for a guy our age to be involved in Kiruv programs? That would include like Kiruv Rechokim and also giving chaburas to boys who come from families? Or should one spend all of his time learning Torah at this age in our lives?
Should I take this one first? Okay, now I think those two things, meaning you gave two alternatives to learning Torah. One was Kiruv and the other is teaching. I don't think they're the same, meaning I think they pick up on two different very positive qualities that a person would need, that a person should have at some point in his life. Kiruv is more based in the sense of achrayus for Klal Yisrael, a sense of avas Yisrael, and a sense of it's more of like a losam l'adam reyecha, that you can't bear to see that there are Jewish people that do not have a meaningful connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam in the context of a life of Torah and mitzvos, and it like hurts to see such a thing. That's healthy. It's healthy that it should hurt to see such a thing. You read about Rav Noach Weinberg, he was I think it's safe to say, like a meshugal davrecha, like he was absolutely crazy about this. Like he thought 99% success is 100% failure, until every single Jew in this world is more connected to the Ribbono Shel Olam, we have failed, and this is what we're supposed to do to bring Mashiach. And he certainly was of the mindset that everybody should be involved in that, and you have to give up on potential for Gadlus and Torah for the sake of that. And again, it's healthy that there are people like that. I think in general, when you think about extremes, it's not necessarily good to be an extremist. We're big believers in the Shvil Hazav, but having extremists sort of keeps us honest sometimes. Having people who are Meshugal Davrecha just like reminds us, oh, there is a value, and that's what that value looks like in its pristine form. I have to balance it with like real life, but like that's what that value looks like in its pristine form. So whereas giving chaburas and teaching, that's a skill of when a person is able to say something in a clear way, it's an indication that he's thinking clearly and that you're able to, that you understood things properly. And that's critical to learning. That's critical to the actual learning of Torah. It doesn't have to be chaburis to little children. It could be just among your chaverim, everyone in your yeshiva. You should have some Thursday night chabura where you get together and one person says to the other guys something like that. Those are different skills. I haven't really answered the question. The question was, should people stop learning full time and instead at your age and dedicate significant amounts of time to these other very noble and holy endeavors? So as you know, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, about 10% of your time should be dedicated to chesed. You have to give meiser of your time, but that doesn't necessarily mean a specific type of chesed. It could be learning with someone who's a little weaker than you in learning and helping him develop in his learning. That's also chesed. It could mean helping to clean up the chadar ochel after, could be putting the svarim away in the base of medrash when everyone else runs to the chadar ochel hoping to get the last piece of schnitzel or something. All of those things are, that's what your father taught me many years ago. Chaskel Freundlich said, you think there's no chesed to be done? Let someone else get the last piece of schnitzel. You pick up some svarim. It was like eye-opening. That's chesed, that's also chesed. I think we're sometimes a little too quick to run away from the base medrash. As long as we find something holy to do, we're like, oh, okay, I don't have to be learning right now. I think, while all of these things are good and some people should be doing them, I think we sometimes, when we're just, we've been learning for 5 minutes, and we're too quick to ready, and I speak to myself, see the last question, right? Where, I ran away from learning a little too quickly, a lot too quickly, and it's not, I think we have to be really honest with ourselves and consult with people who can be honest with us about what we ought to be doing at each stage.
Just to note, Rabbi Leibowitz did not leave the base medrash too early. Klal Yisrael was pulling him And when you're pulled out of the Beis Medrash, but the way that you serve is by staying in the Beis Medrash, you know, that's not called being out of the Beis Medrash. Just as a PS to that that comment. I agree with the chilek that Rabbi Leibowitz made in terms of the two parts of that question, but first 2 points. Number one, sometimes in order to influence in life and to be mashpia, one has to be a little selfish at earlier stages of life. So during 1 year in yeshiva, I remember when I was a Rebbe in YU, so there were all these, you know, how much are you involved in NCSY, how much are you involved in, I tried to have you involved in other, getting a job, this and that. I was very strong in terms of now's your time to be about yourself. Now's your time to grow from within. Because you could be the best you afterwards by focusing on yourself a little more than later in life. And there are different stages. Again, it doesn't mean zero, but sometimes we have to, you know, make sure things aren't so diluted at the beginning, because then it's going to have a long-term effect, right? If we dilute our learning, if we dilute the level of iyun that we do, if we dilute anything, right? The Rambam writes in Hilchas Ishus, right? Marriage is a beautiful thing, but if somebody feels like right now, if I get married, I'm going to have olal tzavari, and I have to push it off a little bit. Again, I'm a big fan of getting married young, but if the Rambam says, just as an example, then you're allowed to push it off because there's time for Talmud Torah, and there has to be a focus of that in order to achieve the greater result, you know, later on. As Rabbi Leibowitz said, giving a chabura, you know, and teaching, that's not outside of the Beis Medrash. As well, maybe we'll get to a little bit later in terms of halacha, but the greatest way of learning is to teach. Right? The Rabbi Sachs, who was just here this week, likes to quote a Rashi in Brachos that talks about that the schar that a, like Mara says, the vavish around there, that the schar that if somebody gets of going to a shir is the schar halicha that you get. Any schar halicha about sitting in the shir? They even get schar for that. So it says there, because most people aren't able to repeat over what they heard la'achar zman. So that's the sheer in learning. I don't get the schar of learning because I won't be able to repeat it. So that means the depths, right? That's the. But he likes to pick up on that Rashi. But so again, when we have to say it over, when you prepare something, so obviously you know it better. Okay, we'll get to that maybe in a different question. But given that. There's definitely also room for sharing, getting back to the other question. A, just in terms of having an outlet outside the Beis Medrash. Outlets are crucial. When I speak to Talmidim, you know, what should I do for the summer? Should I stay even Baruch Hashem and Kirby Avenue? It's been pretty strong, guys staying till late in the Zman. But if somebody asked me in January, what should I do? Again, maybe I'm a radical, maybe not in a good way, I don't know. I understand the value of summer programs. I understand the value of being a counselor and being out, especially, let's say, between Shana Aleph and Shana Bet, and, you know, wanting to be. So outlets just, I mean, it's not outlet, not focusing on what you're doing, I think is an important thing. There's a beautiful Tiferes Yisrael, maybe I quoted it last summer, about one of the 48 Kinyani Torah is Miyetzicha. Usually see, Miyetzicha is don't shmu so much. Don't shmu so much. So Tiferes Yisrael says, no, you need a little bit of hak. Miyetzicha, right? You need a little bit. You need to have a little bit in order to not go crazy. So again, I have to have a balance. Miyetzicha, right? So it's good to have a little outlet, but also there's building from being a mashpia outside. There's self-building, but from being a counselor, from being somebody who could give. So not just the fact that you're out, but you know that could also be being a going once a month on a Shabbaton or something be involved in any type of kira opportunity. So I think there's growth that could happen that way. But again, one has to remember the years in yeshiva are crucial for internal growth, for focusing on oneself. And there'll be time for outward later on in life.
When smicha students learn halacha, how should they properly balance properly learning the sugya, as one would do if they were learning the Masechta Be'ian? That would include learning with all the Rishonim, and learning the relevant Gemaras, and learning it very, very well, versus just a cursory glance at all the Rishonim and the Gemaras, and for the purpose of memorizing the Shulchan Aruch and the relevant posting.
Okay, so I know a little bit about smicha students, so that's, I feel like I can get us started on that question. The thing about smicha students is that I've discovered is that they come in all different madrigos of learning. There are smicha students that it's very hard to make a single program for 200 guys, some of whom didn't pick up a Gemara till sometime in Shana Bet. Some of whom never even went to Israel and went to a secular college and decided at some point from their days in the Hillel in the secular college or something, or in the OU jail, talking to their OU JLIC rabbis, that, yeah, I want to be a rabbi and I'm ready for smicha. And they never finished, they never learned a mesechta. They never. And then there are other guys who have been mitzuyon in their entire lives. So it's very, very hard to answer that question from such a broad, when you're speaking about such a broad group of people. There's one guy that was in my shir the first year that I was in YU, who was in Rav Shachter's kol in the afternoon, so it's 40 block Gemara Rashi Tosfos, 4 bechinas, nothing's changed in the way Rav Shachter gives his kol of bechinas, and the guy had learned Gittin, his Shana Aleph in Eretz Yisrael, and the kol was doing Gittin, so he spent 10 minutes a day just quickly looking over Gittin, and he got 100 in every bechina, and he spent the rest of the afternoon, the other 3.5 hours, going through sections of Shulchan Aruch that we don't cover in Smicha. The guy knows probably Dalal Chalkei Shulchan Aruch right now, and he's in the same Smicha program as the guy who's not sure which way you're supposed to hold it, which side is Rashi, which side is Tosos. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's very hard to say. But speaking broadly, certainly, I think kulei alma lo pligi, that iyun is a prerequisite for halacha. It's not possible to really to be a posek of any stature if you can't analyze sources, if you can't analyze Rishonim, if you can't. However, I would recommend, by the way, Rabbi Bleich has a beautiful essay called Lamdus and Halacha, where he tries to show the connection between Lamdus and Halacha and why Lamdus is a prerequisite to Halacha. But a lot of this depends on what you mean by some of the terminology. You ask in the question about a cursory glance of Rishonim. So cursory is a funny word, meaning you're supposed to learn to understand. You're supposed to learn to understand what's this Rishon saying, why does he not say like the other Rishonim, what's their kasha on him, what's his kasha on them. I mean, you're supposed to, what are the nafkaminas between them, how are they reading the Gemara differently, like certain basic questions. I don't know, though, that there was ever a tradition before very, very modern times for great Talmidei Chacham to spend 3 weeks on one line of a Rashba. Meaning, I don't think there was ever such a tradition. So sometimes you'll hear from people, just a cursory read of Rishonim, for someone who didn't spend 3 weeks on one line of a Rashba. I mean, that would mean that all of our Gedolim throughout all the generations until literally 20 years ago, only had cursory views of Rishonim. So it's important to understand, to gain clarity, to be able to conceptualize, and then you're ready to learn halacha. There has to be an assumption that there is a certain basic skill set of learning Gemara before you're able to really learn halacha properly.
I agree with everything, and I'm not in charge of a smicha program, so maybe I can speak a little more freely. And that is, I'm going to focus a little different aspect, and that is in terms of the learning, 100% a prerequisite is limud and iyun, but I definitely think that, let's say, if somebody's in smicha, and in the morning they're learning, the Gemara b'iyun shir, whatever yeshiva is doing, and in the afternoon they're learning bas b'chalav, it's a different focus of a limud. And when one is going through the sugyas of Taroves and Bittul, it's different. It's a different type of limud. If you're learning the Gemara, you're not going to spend as much time going through every Ramban, Rashba, Meiri. There's a different goal at that time. There's halacha, and there's iyun. And there are different goals in that. Again, there are some Rabbanim that like to learn more of the halacha l'maisa mesechtas. There are some that like to learn less of the halacha l'maisa mesechtas, and they're different drachim. Maybe we'll get to that a little bit later. But the best way of learning halacha, I found I didn't really know any halacha until I was forced to start teaching halacha. Once you have to start teaching it, I'm a boy. Hilcha Shabbos. When did we ever learn Hilcha Shabbos? I have to know about oxen. You know what I mean? That's oxen eating in your field. Ask me questions about that. Don't ask me about how to put the pot on the blech on Shabbos. Right? That's not... But really, we so it, whatever. There's a certain. I'm not making fun. Chas v'shalom. Oxen teach us Yisodos and Baba Kama. Obviously, it's amazing. But there's a finite amount of time, and there's you know, curriculum decisions that have to be made by high schools to teach guys and the topics. But you know, when you have to start teaching something, then you're forced to know it, like we said before. But I have found the best way to, let's say you're learning halacha, the best way to learn halacha is just, even if you're not teaching it, to write outlines and summaries as if you're teaching it. Because then you can focus on, again, the Gemara and the Rishonim and as things go on. And, you know, they say that, what's our generation called? You know, the Gaonim, the Rishonim, the Achronim, so what's our generation? So we don't know until after. But some say that we're the Malachtim. Some say Malachtim, because you want a sefer on anything, you go into the Sfarim store and you have it. Kiddush Levana Kihilchasa, right? Shiluach Hakan Kihilchasa. Every sefer you can find. So learning halacha. So again, they're wonderful kitsurim if you want, but if you want to know it, and again, this is just the reality. The reality, but it's halavai should be the worst reality. You want to give a shir on something, you find an article. No, we do that too, right? But I'm doing, you have an article on a certain halacha. If I want to give a shir on certain, now I have about 30 articles. I could take out a Hakone Olamo. I could take it out, and I have a shir on many different topics. But the way to know it is that look up all the marmakomos that are in the article. You can't just like you use a Rav Ribiat for Hilchos Shabbos. You have to know how to use a Rav Ribiat. Look up all the marmakomos at the back, and then write it up yourself. And so sometimes we learn halacha backwards, but then you have to go forwards again. Again, as Rabbi Leibowitz said, the iyun is and the lumdis is the basis for psak. But most of us, just to note, we're not going to be paskening based on that lumdis. Rav Shechter, Rav Moshe, they paskin based on their lumdis. You know, we have lumdis, and it's important to understand, and you have to have the basic ideas of the psakim. But most of the psakim that we're going to give is based on a feeling of what the poskim have already said in the sugya. But again, to answer the question, yes, you learn the Rashba differently when you're learning bi'iyun, and when you're learning it in halacha, you're focusing more on the content and not as on many of the nuances. But one has to know. And again, the Rabbanut, just as a siman, interesting. Now the Rabbanut, you know, Bechinas in Eretz Yisrael, they're very thorough and comprehensive. So I have a son-in-law who's taken a bunch of the Rabbanut tests. So Rev Yitzchak Yosef, I think he's the Rav Arshi now. So last year he switched the Hilchos Shabbos, because the previous chief, if you're like the Rav Arshi, so you get to choose like how what's on the Masechta. So the previous Rav Arshi had taken out certain simanim of Tur Beis Yosef in Hilchos Shabbos and put in all the Bir Halachas instead. No simanim, because it's more lamais and more. And if you see, became Rav, he said, no way! What, they're taking out Tur Beit Yosef? They're not going to do all these columns and columns? Because he goes through Tur Beit Yosef and he registers and it's all... And that's how he... That's the real way of learning. That's true. That's true. But most of us are Bir Halacha, and, you know, he'll summarize the important Beit Yosefs. But again, so that's... there's different styles. But again, I think definitely learning Halacha is a different derech and mechanism than learning bi'iyun, but obviously you need both.
I just want to add one more thing. First of all, I thought you were going to say our generation is the tachtonim, so I was happy that you said the malachtim. Okay, but that was not what I wanted to add. A lot of times when people learn bi'iyun, they forget that the ketzos is a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, as is the nesivus. So like, meaning, we're like, people like learn and learn and learn, and then they stop like one step short, you know. All it will take sometimes is just at the end of the sugya, just open up Shulchan Aruch, see what the Shulchan Aruch says. It wouldn't be such a bad idea. Maybe your late Thursday night Seder, when you stay up all night Thursday night, should be taking the sugyas that you learned that week and seeing how it plays out on the page of Shulchan Aruch. It wouldn't be such a terrible tikkun in terms of getting a sense of how things get paskened in the end. And that applies to any mesechta, but mitzvah also. I mean, it's not only brachas, it's in Shabbos, it's any mesechta. Therefore, chalak m'shulchan.
What does it mean to receive a Masora from a Rebbe? In our experience, we've seen Rav Shechter and Rosenzweig, and they teach Gemara seemingly in vastly different ways, and presumably they learn Gemara also with different methodologies. As Talmidim of these Rebbeim, how do you reconcile the fact that they're both Talmidim of Rebbe Soloveitchik, yet appear to have entirely different Masoras for Lama Gemara?
I think Rashi at the beginning of the Parsha, this week's Parsha, first Parsha, Rashi says Moshe Rabbeinu said had a higher level of Nevuah and qualitatively than all other Nevi'im. All the Nevi'im had Ko Amar Hashem, while Moshe Rabbeinu had Zeh HaDavar. What's Zeh HaDavar? Zeh HaDavar represents clarity of vision. Whenever you have Zeh in the Torah, it means you can point to it. It's so clear. So Zeh HaDavar, because Moshe Rabbeinu had direct dictation from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, letter for letter, word for word. But all other Nevi'im, they received Nevuah, and they gave it over in their Lashon. Right? That's why you know that there's a story in Yirmiyahu that they knew it was a Navi Sheker, two Navi'im Sheker, because they were saying the exact same words. So whenever you have a Rebbe and you have Talmidim, you know, from a Rebbe, they're not going to say things in the same way. It's part of what they're going to, give out is based on their own personal nitios and their personal ways of thinking. As the example is given, many of the Talmidim of the Rav, great Rabbanim and Poskim, almost every, now most of the Talmidim, many of the Talmidim in the Rebbeim, and why you are Talmidim or Rav Shechter, but, 20 years ago, 20, 30 years ago, many of them are Talmidim of the Rav, and everybody gives shir differently. Rav Rosenzweig and Rav Shechter both do not give shir exactly like the Rav gave shir. Rav Rosenzweig is a Talmud of Rav Lichtenstein, it's probably closer in that realm, but Rav Lichtenstein is a big Talmud of the Rav, and a son-in-law of the Rav, and very different styles. And Rav Aaron's son, who's now Rosh Hashiva and Torah Vadas, gives a different style. A lot of the Nekudos and Yesodos are similar, but everyone takes their, from their own Nofach Mishelahem, and develops it. And Misoras are certain principles, and Yedios, and maybe certain types of methodology. The Gemara talks about you could have one Rebbe for this and one Rebbe for that. I look at it, I had this chus of learning by many Rebbeim, I was in Rav Shechter's kol, I was in Rosenzweig's shir for a number of years, Rabbi Sachs, Rav Asher Weiss over the past couple of years. Who do I give shir like? In my shir? I don't know, I guess myself. It's not like, you take a little bit, I quote more achronim from this Rebbe, and I quote less achronim from this Rebbe, and different styles. Probably the way I try to think, Afrani tachas kapov, but I guess Rav Rosenzweig, who I was sat at his feet for as many years as I could in terms of just what kind of questions to ask and how to categorize and how to the types of questions to ask. But I don't give shir exactly, so everybody it takes different things. We have three avos, we don't have one av, and that's okay. And we all connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu differently. A Misora means that you have to be able to learn from also different Rebbeim. I think it's a problem, and it's the achrayus of a Rebbe. Let me say it in the positive. The achrayus of a Rebbe to be ma'amid talmidim harbe in order to be able to, wherever they are in life, to be able to learn from various sources of Torah. And a Rebbe should never give off the impression that I'm the only derech and I'm the only Rebbe. And after this, then, nobody else is really learning. And nobody else is, to go to an example in YU, and I was a Rebbe in YU, I remember Talmid saying to me, from other programs even, like, I can't find a Rebbe, there are 25 Rebbeim here. There's not one. We have to look inside of us. We have to make sure that we get the most out of Rebbeim. But again, Misora means to be truth to the Misora, to be true to the fealty to Misora, and we connect in different ways, but we use our own personalities. We take what our Rebbeim gave us, and then give it out, and have our own signon in terms of the Torah that we give out.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. People used to say that what Rav Rosenzweig does in shir, Rav Shechter does at home before he says the shir. So that's not true. They don't think the same way. Meaning they the same principles, again, the same. They come from the same Masorah. But like Rav Rosenzweig said, they're different people. They process things differently, and they teach entirely differently. And neither of them are like the Rav in terms of the way that they teach. There's no, I mean, it's an objective fact that Soloveitcher covered 50, 60 blot a year in Shir. Rav Rosenzweig definitely doesn't do that, right? And it's also equally clear that Rav Soloveitcher Shir was very different than Rav Shachter's style of Shir. And that's okay, because Rav Rosenzweig needs to be Rav Rosenzweig and Rav Shachter needs to be Rav Shachter, the same way the Rav needed to be the Rav. You know, I think that that's perfectly clear. I don't think either of them is a... like a corruption or like this unacceptable variation. You know, they're being them. They're being what they're supposed to do. I do believe that whatever it is that you do, whatever path that you choose in terms of which style talks most to you, you should believe in it. I mean, you shouldn't always be looking over your shoulder that, you know, because my chaver, who's in a different shir, said, no, you don't know how to learn it this way. No, you should believe in what you do. You shouldn't necessarily believe everybody else is wrong, but you should believe in what you do. You should believe that this is a viable path and perhaps the right path for you. And it's funny that we view Rav Rosenzweig and Rav Shach, I mean, they're under the same roof. They're both massive Talmid Chacham. It's like Rabbi Berman, the president, joked with me when I introduced him to my son Yisrael. So my son Yonah came to YU and he went to Rav Shachter Shir. And Yisrael came to YU and he went to Rav Rosenzweig Shir. So Rabbi Berman asked Yisrael, who's Shir you? And he said, Rav Rosenzweig. And he says, wow, look how broad-minded your father is. That he's so open to go all the way from Rav Shachter to Rav Rosenzweig. And it was a joke. And it's obviously a joke because, you know, it's not that far off. I do think that in general in life you should have a Rebbe. I agree 100% with what Rabbi Rosner said. And the Mishnah says that you should be lomid mikol adam. It's important. At the same time, even as you lomid mikol adam, I do think that it is important to have one primary Rebbe. It doesn't have to be the same person throughout your entire life necessarily, but there should be like one primary Rebbe that you look to for, you know, as a semel of what a Talmud Chacham is. Rabbi Goldberg did an interview with Rav Shachter a while ago where he was asking about all the different Talmid Chacham that he met and all the different Rebbeim. And one thing that emerged from that interview is that Rav Shachter is very nice, so he said nice things about everybody. He only had one Rebbe in his entire life. Meaning he learned a lot from Rabbi Gorelick and he learned a lot from his random high school Rebbeim that, you know, whatever. And he learned a lot from... He only had one Rebbe. Meaning it was very clear that there was one primary Rebbe that he had, and I think that's okay. That's not a bad idea.
Some areas of Torah law, particularly those relating to something like capital punishment or animal sacrifice, seem totally foreign and sometimes somewhat barbaric to someone growing up in 21st century America. What should our kavana be in tefillos like Hashiva Shabtani Karishana and when we're hoping for Yeshua in general? What should our kavana be when deep down we have immense trouble imagining a world run by a Jewish theocracy?
Okay, so is this... Yeah? Mm-hmm. 1, 3...
That's
fine? Okay. I think there may be things that don't resonate with a modern mind. I happen to not like the examples in the question. Meaning, capital punishment is not like so off the wall. I mean, half the states in America have capital punishment. Meaning, that's not
specifically
like...
for violations of like Chil Shabbos or something.
Okay, so maybe we don't understand what Chil Shabbos is. But more likely, the Torah society applies capital punishment very, very sparingly. Meaning you really have to be negligent in the extreme to end up with capital punishment. Rav Moshe has a famous tshuva. I think it's the only tshuva in all of the Gros Moshe that was written to a guy, if I'm not mistaken, the only one written to a Nachri. He wrote a tshuva to the governor of New York in 1976 or something like that, where it was the governor before Cuomo, before the first Cuomo, before Mario Cuomo. I forgot his name. But the governor was considering capital punishment, so he was consulting with religious leaders from all the different religions. So he wanted to know what the Jewish perspective was on capital punishment. So he sent a letter to Rav Moshe Feinstein asking for his perspective. So Rav Moshe wrote a tshuva where he basically explains, fascinatingly, he does not explain what the din is of Ben Noach. The whole tshuva is about the din of Yisrael. which is interesting. I guess because he thought, if he's not asking for practical advice, he's asking what our attitude is toward capital punishment. And the better measure of our attitude toward capital punishment is the Din of Yisrael. But Ramosh says, essentially, it never happens. That was the long and short of the tshuva is that it never happens. Why is it there on the books? Because when you're a student learning in yeshiva and you see that Chil Shabbos is a chi of skila, so that will resonate with you that, wow, Hashem must really care a lot about Chil Shabbos if he thinks that that's what a person deserves. But not that that's what's actually going to happen. I think we often confuse, and Tarom Peril, we often confuse what actually happens practically in Jewish society with what, you know, could be written on the books. You know, people will say, well, why are we any better than the Arabs that want to kill all of us? We want to destroy all of Amalek, and if, we have all of these other... history is not full of examples of Jewish people going around killing innocent people. I mean, the way it actually has played out throughout history is that we pretty much don't do that. So I'm not particularly nervous that it's going to lead to some, you know, crazy barbaric society. As far as Karbanos are concerned, again, I Rav Kook has very interesting things to say about animal sacrifice and what's going to be in the future with animal sacrifice, and you know the idea that mankind is undergoing this moral evolution and improvement, and eventually we'll go back to the Bechinas Adam Arishon, and we're going to be vegetarians, and once we're vegetarians, maybe there's no need for Karbanos anymore. It's a very big chiddush. The whole Mahalich is a big chiddush. I don't feel like I need that Mahalich. Like, if a Kodesh Baruch Hu says, you bring a carbon. I don't know, we shecht meat all the time now. Like, it's not, so we get to shecht it as a, and to elevate the animal as a Zareich Nichach Lashem. So then, it's even better. When we're eating basar, it's not just going to be because we're drawn to crunchies. You know, it's going to be something more meaningful and something more impactful. It's going to be a mitzvah sachila. I don't find that difficulty. I thought you would have said, if you had to pick one, I thought you would have gone with slavery, right? Meaning, like, we've advanced beyond slavery. That's what I would have. I would have thought, but you didn't, so I don't have to answer that question. No, Misha kana evelatzmo kana adonatzmo. Slavery isn't slavery. It's not
servitude.
Yeah, it's totally different. Having said that, a particular gadol b'torah in a private moment told me he's not sure that slavery is coming back. So,
just to basically say the same thing in different words that I believe was said. That is, again, Karbanos and Mises Bezdin, I think, so those, they're two very different. Mises Bezdin, as was said, it hardly, the Mishnah already says, right, that once every 7 years, 70 years, I mean, who in their right mind would be Makabel Hasra in front of witnesses and say Afal Pikain? It doesn't happen, and, you know, it's about teaching values. It's about the nuances and details of halacha teach us from within the Ratzon Hashem. And even though the Gemara says only three things, lo hayav lo nivra, aval, right, it's just l'shalim schar, but it's, you know, we have to realize this: these acts were done, whatever acts they were, in so unusual, with a Kabbalah Hasra in front of two Eidim, at a time when there were open miracles, and there was Hashkachas Hashem, and everyone knew that this person in public was being mechalal shem shamayim and undermining belief in God in front of the, like last week's parsha, Cusby and Zimri. So it's hard for us to fathom that. We think of Mises Bezdin, we think of ISIS. That's what people like, oh, that'd be... It hardly ever happens. And if the 71 great, or 23 of the greatest rabbis of the generation, so it's a very different idea. And one has to... And I think this is an example of, you know, looking in from the outside, you know, people could make fun of various things. Anything you don't know much about and you didn't really study from within, you know, it's easy to make fun of. I don't know the first thing about golf. I've never played golf. I did miniature golf a couple of times maybe when I was a kid. But I don't know anything about golf. A lot of people seem to enjoy it. It looks to me like the most boring sport. I let you drive around in a golf cart. and you carry your putts, and you hit it, and you try to get on the green, it goes into the water, and I get mooks, I don't even know, and like, right, the lower number you have,
you.
The
better. We believe you. Right? We believe you, that you know.
And the, so, I'm saying, but many people love it, but I can make fun of it, why? Because I know nothing about it. If I really valued it, maybe I'd study it, and so, it's the same thing with many areas of halacha. And maybe halacha in general, like people can nitpick and focus on things, but you have to learn from within. And when it comes to carbonos, people say, oh, one second, think about it. Almost every carbon, all the meat is eaten. Right? So unless you're a vegetarian, you believe that you're allowed to kill animals, they're done with killing animals to eat. What do? We take the blood and the fat, which is usually just thrown out, and we do something with it to sanctify what we're doing. And there's meaning. There's symbolism to everything. My first year in the Kol Elyon, Rabbi Kahn was still the Rosh Kol El, but then my second year, Rabbi Rosenzweig took over as the Rosh Kol El. So the first year with Rabbi Rosenzweig, we learned Maseches Vachem. That was the limud. Until you learn something the iyun from within, and you appreciate, you know, every detail. Why does a chatas have Zrikon on four corners, and it's lamala mikhuta sikra, and all the other commandments are less, and an asham shares some things with a chatas, and something with an asham, and then you go back and you read Sefer Bracious, and the brothers sometimes say ashamnu, and they said something say chatanu, what's the difference between a chatas and an asham, and the different types of minchas, and why is there 100 blot on pigle, right? And there's right, so the details. One of my chaburas was on Big Day Kahuna, in Big Day Kahuna, so it's like. That year, Parsha Tesava was my favorite Parsha. It was unbelievable. I'm like, this is so exciting. I mean, the tzitz, why is the tzitz not here? And the, why? Tesava is boring, isn't it? Right, what is a Big Day Kahuna? The answer is, if you know that every beged is meaningful, so then there's it. And why is the Michna Sayin first? What does that teach us about Lachasos Bzar Erva? The more you learn about something, so again, part of what we mourn in this time period and in life is that we don't appreciate certain areas of halacha. That's part of it. We can't fathom what it's like to have a Beis HaMikdash and the Kohanim and the Nisim. But the Torah says it's going to be inspiring just to see the Kohanim Bavadasim, Yisrael B'duchanam, be medactic about every little thing. Like, again, it's hard for us. It's hard for us to be inspired by blood and fats. But when it's used in a sanctified way, and you know from within, and you're appreciating the nuances and learning values from things, then it'll be easier, right? We put black boxes on our head. How is that inspiring? What does that mean? We're used to it, and we learn the messages of it. So same thing with carbonos. And again, it's not except carbonola, but all the other carbonos, there's no animal. We shecht animals just like the whole world eats meat. And that's something that we have to know. Again, when somebody is ready to listen from within, then we can give them answers. Sometimes people just knock and say, oh, the halacha says this, and the halacha says that, and the halacha is anti-animal and anti... Let's learn and study it and appreciate it from within.
Switching to a different topic. Before a boy begins to date, what are a few things he should have figured out? And what are some things he doesn't yet need to know or have planned out?
I think there's a general, let's say a general ideas, a hashkafas olam, a little bit to be the type of life in general that I want to live, a commitment to halacha, but a certain general things. But I'm a big supporter of the less you have in your mind, the better. The less rigid and the less narrow. You know, just have in mind, what do you look for? You look for Baalas Chesed. You look for Midos. You look for commitment to Halacha. You know, there are two schools in my neighborhood. I'm not sure which one, you know, I would want to send my kids to. You know, that's... Are these schools going to be around when you have kids? You know, it's the more medactic... And I've gotten... I get a lot of calls about Talmidim from prospective parents of girls. And sometimes you get the wackiest questions. You know where the grandmother went to school? I'm like, the grandmother? I said, you're going out with a guy, he's a great guy. He has all the midos. There's no red flags. It's all good. It's like, no. But I heard that... So sometimes, again, the less the better. Look for common values, sensitivity, chesed, you know, potential wife material, mother material. Let's give you I remember people ask me, I've been asked this numerous times, you know, like, was it an issue? Your wife's a doctor, she's going to medical school. You know, I met my wife in January, and we got engaged in March, and we were married in June. So, and she started medical school in August. So Baruch Hashem, Siyata D'Shmai. So like, oh, did you? So I'm like, people ask me, like, should I be nervous about she wants to go to medical school? I'm like, it wasn't even, like, I don't even remember thinking about it. Like, it wasn't, like, does medical school define a person? Like, I'm going out with a girl, right? I'm going out, oh. So she has a profession, yeah. But it wasn't even like, If you meet somebody and it's the right person and you're a team and you're connected and you both have the same value system in terms of halacha and in terms of the type of house you want to build, so then whatever, you'll work things out. Yes, is it that a residency, a medical school? But it wasn't something that I even thought about beforehand. It wasn't a shikul, because it was just you go out with a person who has all the midos and all and the personality. You know, that's what defines, and sometimes we have so many, you know, other things. I'll give you Aliyah. So I was in the kollel. I thought I was gonna make Aliyah right after I finished smicha. So I went out, and what you go out. So is Israel a value? Israel's a value. But I met my wife, and medical school's 4 years of medical school, 3 years of residency. But as you go on, so there's a little flexibility because you realize it's the right person, so you're going to build together. And if it means delay the Aliyah plans for now, you delay the Aliyah plans for a time. And probably, I'm guessing, I'm a Rav in the five towns, and I don't know, we both wanted to, but my wife probably gets the final credit, the final push of, you know, we always knew we wanted to, but as our kids were getting older, so she gets a lot of the credit, maybe all the credit. So it was delayed, but if the values, the general values, again, have as little, not little, but the less important focus of things, you know, have in your mind and be open to, don't be as rigid in certain details, and that'll give you a lot more flexibility in terms of how the relationships develop.
I agree with everything. I think looking for particular benchmarks can sometimes be dangerous because it's not the same for everybody. I have a friend, a very close friend, who when we were in YU together, I said, I asked him, once did you start dating? And he said, no. I said, oh, okay, just curious, like, when do you plan on starting? He said, I think I'm going to wait until I stop laughing every time I hear a bathroom word. he thought like that would be like that maturity. And guess what? We're 46. He's not there yet, you know? I mean, thank God he decided to give up on that benchmark, and he got married to a girl who tolerates that part of him. And he's a very successful doctor and doing great things, and he has a wonderful family, right? Meaning I'm always a little nervous about particular benchmarks that are meant to be universal. Rav Bamberger was here this week, so for 3 years I was zochet to sit next to him in the Beis Medrash for morning seder every day, and he was mashkiach and lander, so invariably guys would come over to him and would talk about dating and should they start dating, and you know, now it's in YU, it's whenever anyone's sitting with Rabbi Blass in his table in the middle of the Beis Medrash, so you know that guy's dating, right? I mean, that's always my son said to me that Rabbi Blass is the most powerful person in the modern Orthodox community because he's the one who decides who marries who. So, but Rabbi Bamberger would I remember he would do this. He would take out a piece of paper, he would sit down with the guy, and he would say, okay, let's go through what it costs to live. Like, you know, this is what it costs for an apartment. Do you have someone helping you with that? Or are you going to, like, is there a plan? I mean, just like, you can't be shocked when, you know, life hits you in the face if you decide to be an adult. So if you're deciding that you're ready to date and that you're ready to be an adult and that you're ready to commit to what it says in Ksuba, the plan might be, you know, I'll only date rich girls. It's a terrible plan, but that, you know, the plan might be that. The plan might be, but there's got to be some hasaga of a sense of achrayus, of a sense of responsibility that that comes with it. But more important than that is to, every Musar Seder you ever learned is preparation for marriage, Right? Marriage is the beis medrash for your midos. It's the most intense form of ben adam l'chaveiro that you could have. So the more you worked on your ben adam l'chaveiro, and then, I mean, obviously when it's a woman, it's an entirely different, you know, kind of ben adam l'chaveiro, but the more you worked on your ben adam l'chaveiro, the better off you'll be. And as I mentioned to you guys Friday night, I think all the minutia, the little things that... Most important thing to pay attention to as you're dating is, how does this person make me feel? Do I feel comfortable with this person? Do I feel happy with this person? I can't tell you how many guys are busy checking boxes in their heads, and they feel nervous around the person, and they feel anxious around the person, and they feel terrified of the person, but she checks every box. She's really bright, and she's really pretty, and she's really this, and she's really that. And then they have miserable marriages. I mean, it's or they have a lot to work on. I think it's just important to pay attention to yourself. Just pay attention to the chemistry and to how you feel with the person. You know, speaking about like the stupid questions of people, I'm not going to give you examples of stupid questions, but there's one story I love to tell about the opposite. I once got a call from a fellow who is a billionaire. That is not an exaggeration. He is a billionaire. And he is a big Talmud Chacham. And, you know, you would imagine for his daughter, he could pick whoever he wants, right? And he called me up to find out about a shidduch of a guy that lives in the Five Towns. And he said, I don't know anyone who lives in the Five Towns. I'm like, are you sure you're a billionaire? But he wanted to find out about a particular guy. I said, I don't know the guy, but I could find out. I'll ask his rebbein. I said, what do you want me to know? Do you want me to know, like, what, you know, like what kind of family, you know, how much money there is in the family? You want to know whether he finished Shas yet? What do you want to know? He said, I just want to know if he's the kind of guy that's going to be nice to my daughter. That's going to treat my daughter nicely. It's going to have derech eretz and be a good person. So I called up the guy's rebbe, and I said, someone asked to find out about this fellow. A very chashuv person asked to find out about this fellow. And the guy's rebbe said, he went to Harvard Law School. He knows how to learn. He's this. And he started going on and on. I said, you know what? Forget all that. He really just wanted to know, is he going to be nice to his daughter? And the Rebbe said, oh, no, he's actually not going to be. So, like, I mean, can you imagine not asking that question and asking all the other questions? Checks every box. He's just, a mean, rotten guy, but he checks every box. So it's important to look at the things that are important, not the things that are less important.
Switching to rapid-fire questions. We have four rapid-fire questions.
You're related to the chef manager.
First question is, what's the best piece of advice you've ever gotten and from whom?
Just two or three short lines. One I said in the shir on whatever it was 2 nights ago, the fact that there are different kinds of shilas. And there I said the three types of shilas the rabbi gets, those who weren't here, the three types of shilas. Number one is the chalon shilas. Rabbi, my chalon is burning, and I'm having 20 people over for Shabbos. Like, what do? You got to give that answer right now. Most shilas are category two, the overnight shilas. Rabbi, I put this fork in the milchik and the fleishik and hilchus nida, hilchus general. Most shilas are overnight, so I'll get back to you. And then the third type of shilas is the overarching shilas that are only for the yichidei school of every door. The brain death, fertility, major shilas. So that helped a lot because it helps categorize and helps you with your humility, number one. Two, another great line that I forgot where this came from. That is, a rabbi needs to take his position seriously but not to take himself so seriously. That means both halves of those are crucial. He has to take his position seriously, meaning the rabbi is many people's connection to God. And whether you like it or not, they identify you with the shliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They identify you with ruchnius, and you got to take your position seriously. Even if I want to do something, you got to take your position seriously. But you can't take yourself so seriously. It's good for the wife to have that, but you can't. I like to tell the story. I once wrote this. They asked me. I wrote a foreword to a sefer. There's a sefer about the Rav on Bracha and Thanksgiving. I forgot the exact lashon. They asked me to write a foreword for that. So I wrote a foreword. The foreword is called "The Rav I Never Knew," because when I came to MTA, the Rav was already sick. I never heard a shir from him, but I quote the Rav all the time. The Rav Nevenu. So I start off that with a story. When my daughter was 3 years old, we still lived in Woodmere at the time, somebody called on the phone, you know, the old phone that's connected to the wall. And somebody called and said, hi. And, I mean, she told me this afterwards. Said, hi, is the Rav home? So my daughter answered, the Rav's on the wall, but my father's home. So I said, Abba, it's for you. I'm like, so I heard, but it's like, you know, take your position seriously, but then take yourself so seriously. And just one other, it's rapid fire, right? Right? Is this too long? Is this too long? I don't know Reshefkin, so I don't know.
Get him on the podcast.
Right. But the third, I think Rabbi Feldman from Atlanta writes this in one of his books, when a rabbi goes on vacation, he should dress differently. I remember when that when I saw that, it's true. It's true. You feel different. If I go away with my wife for a day, I make sure to put on a pullover shirt. Because you feel different. And that's just a tiny little thing that I found very, very insightful.
Okay, two quick things. Rav Silver from Karen Vyavna told me to go into Klei Kodesh, even though you have no idea where that path is going to take you, you have to have a certain amount of bitachon. For most people, it works out and they're happy. Take the leap of faith. Great, great advice for me. Second was Rav Schechter often says, when Hashem gives you a present, you say thank you. A lot of times people try to push their brachos down the line. Maybe I don't want to get married. She's only the first girl I dated. Why? But even though things are great, or, you know, yeah, we can have a baby right now, but it would be more convenient to have a baby in 5 years from now. If Hashem gives you a present, you say thank you.
Moving on, what's one secular book that Rebbe would recommend you read?
I like Give and Take by Adam Grant, and also Love Languages for When You Get Married.
I don't really.
I said two, so we're going to say.
I remember years ago, I read the first four Harry Potters because my kids were really into it, so I figured I could have to converse with them. And then Daf Yomi started. So then I read the first four, that was it. But I don't really have any. The Prime Ministers, I think I read years ago. But I don't know if that's called secular.
How does Rebbe enunciate the Echad in Shema?
What does that mean?
Shema Yisrael, Hashem, Hashem.
Okay, that's from between me and Hashem. What the?
But I'm passing that one also.
Yeah. It's a riot to the Teimanim. They have to say a thuh, right? There's a thuh.
Every Tiktok Meshuggah is going to send me an email. Thank you. I'd rather not.
And in following the tradition of my uncle, what time does Rebbe go to sleep at night and what time does he wake up in the morning?
I like to know that about Rebbe Leibowitz, but actually.
No, I get a good night's sleep. I need to sleep. I don't function without. My wife can function without sleep. She's amazing. I don't know how. I can't function without sleep. I need to get a good night's sleep. You can see it on me, like, immediately if I didn't get sleep. I'm usually snapping at you, and you know, like it's really bad. Really bad. So I try to get to sleep by 11. I have to wake up by 5 if the daf is going to happen.
Yeah. Also, I definitely... What a Talmud asked me 25 years ago, I remember, could you daven to not need as much sleep as you... You know, is that like a fair question to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Is that like asking, I hope I don't want to have to eat. I don't want to... Sleep is a natural thing. So we have to try to get as much sleep as we need, as Rabbi Leibowitz said, to function. And also, I try not to be in the Beis Medrash too late. The Chofetz Chaim used to turn off the lights. Right at the Beis Medrash, you want to stay up till 2 in the morning? Let's see how your chakras is. So basically, we all have to make sure we're balanced in the proper way and get as much sleep as we need. And the Rambam said to get 8 hours, but he didn't get 8 hours. We have to try to get as much sleep as we need, be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Thank you.